Blog Talk Radio.
Africa, the center of the world. Latitude zero, longitude zero. Planned by the Creator. The Xanthropus was the first man found on the Earth. That Earth was the motherland, Africa. We know that without total understanding of what happened in the past, it would be difficult to relate to the future. We know that within the structure of the music, there should be a message, and the message should be truth. So now, we give you Africa, the center of the world.
That's right, Africa, center of the world. Welcome this evening to Africa on the Move with Brother Africa. We live and rescribing to give you our best, because to give you our best is because you deserve nothing less. Tonight, we have basically an open mic night tonight. We have an open mic. We're asking our listening audience and our viewers to call in and share with us issues and ideas that are on our minds, and let's just talk a little bit about it. Because there seems to be a lot of things going on right now in this world, and we know everything is interconnected, and let's try to get a better understanding of its connectedness. So tonight, our program is open to our listening audience. We'd like to hear what's on your mind. Please feel free to call in at 323-679-0841. 323-679-0841. We're going to take the callers first come, first serve. The time is unlimited. Have all the time you need. But we want to be a learning experience, because it's the masses of the people who make the history. It's the masses of the people who are the workers who build. It's through the masses of the people that allow us to develop. So, you know, you are the owners. You know, don't let these capitalist elitists make you believe that they're the ones who make things go. Because without you, there'll be no them. So even as a human being, you can't even think in isolation without other human beings. So even the whole social process of being human, to be able to think and function, is not directly contributed to an individual. So on that note, listen to Africa on the News. Let's take our first call. We're going to start with our brother Vernon, brother 0248, welcome to Africa on the Move, and talk to the people. What are some of the things you'd like to talk about, brother Vernon?
Well, God bless, brother Lee. I
Actually, I just called in to listen to it. I don't know what's going to be the format or the topics of the day, you know, but I do appreciate you calling me and alerting me that you was on the air today. So I'd just like to listen in and see how it goes.
Okay, we'll put you on hold. If you want to say something,
okay,
hit that line one. We'll come right back to you. But we really just have an open topic. It's no particular theme, so just hit me back up. We have you on hold, and we'll bring you back in. Let's go to our next call. We have Brother Moses. Brother Moses, welcome to Africa on the Move. What's on your mind? What you would like to talk about today?
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be in your company on the line in communication. I'm a Marxist basically, and I believe in class struggle and dialectical and historical materialism. And it's just bothering me that, you know, I learned to respect the power of love, so that's what convinced me to become a Christian, one love, one heart. And we have a situation where we need to decide which side we're on. Jesus said in Luke 16:16 that the law and the prophets were unto John the Baptist. And since John the Baptist, the kingdom of heaven is preached. Jesus also prayed that God's will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Yet many preachers today, unlike Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., are telling people to accept conditions as they are, ignore the world, and just keep coming to church and paying your tithes, because Jesus will solve all the world's injustices when he returns. However, the Palestinian people need our help. Your tax dollars are paying to maintain the racist apartheid government of Israel. The U.S. government props up Israel with billions of dollars each year. Zionism is racism. The belief in government of Jews by Jews and for only Jews is Zionism. Well, over 2,000 years ago, there was a Jewish kingdom. But when Jesus was born, the Jews were no longer nation state. This was when David and Solomon were around. Some wanted to return to the good old days, but Jesus said his kingdom was not of his world. He was not for restoring the Israel, resurrecting Israel. He said he was the resurrection. He was a revolutionary and internationalist because he was for all people, not just Jews. He was not a narrow nationalist. In 1948, Palestine was occupied by a well-armed group of Jews who killed and maimed to establish Israel, and that government continues to kill and displace the Palestinian people from their homeland. These Jews are not Christian and don't claim to be Christian, yet it's primarily the Christian community that support them. Either you're part of the solution or you're part of the problem. We need people to get involved. The people of Palestine and the freedom-loving people around the world will not rest until Palestine is free. And what bothered me is I was at a family reunion down in Virginia Beach today, coming back today, and I was listening to the Sunday morning services on the television, and these preachers are all talking about tithes and different little everyday problems when Israel is killing Palestinians, is slaughtering Palestinians, and that's Jesus' message. If any time we need to hear about Jesus' message, we need it today. And I just don't understand what's going on. Anyway, that's my little pet peeve.
Okay, don't go nowhere. We'll come back and respond to some of the things you said. We'd like to have you respond back, as well as we'd like our audience to tune in on this. Next, we can go to our brother. We have Brother Haki on the line. Welcome to Africa on the Move. What's on your mind, Brother Haki? Call us 6029.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
You're on.
Oh no, I was just listening to what your brother was saying in terms of, you know, the whole contradiction around the Zionism as it exists, you know, in its myriad form. One of the things that it's particularly sad, you know, when we utilize religion for the sole purpose of manipulating and exploiting, you know, other people. I mean, religion historically was always intended to offer human beings, as to create a scenario which suggests that human beings can live together, that the caring and sharing, that we create a world which is worthy of creation. But clearly, during the time of Rome, there were those who used religions for political purposes. They understood by utilizing religion they could, in fact, program people to do all kinds of self-destructive things under the guise of religion. And so today we got a situation where people who profess to be religious were engaging in very, very destructive kinds of behaviors. One of the things that is very ironic is that a lot of times, you know, when you people in society who the most humble, the most spiritual, the most caring people in the world, a lot of times tend to be secular. In other words, these are people who don't take a belief in religion one way or the other. But they tend to be more spiritual. And what I find interesting is that a lot of people profess to be, quote-unquote, spiritual or religious. Some of the most corrupt, rotten, selfish, individualistic, uncaring, insensitive, apathetic people on the planet. So I think it's a real irony, and just in terms of, you know, what this thing we call religion. I think also, keep in mind, I think particularly when you talk about African people in the whole context of religion, one of the things to understand that even though Christianity originated in Ethiopia, East Africa, one of the things that there's a very peculiar understanding of the Christian religion, particularly as it relates to the colonial era, in terms of, you know, at a time religion specifically was used to deceive the masses of African people. One of the things, there's a series called Slaves in the Quarters, and so people get an opportunity to read that series. It's a very good series. In terms of documenting, you know, everyday life in colonial America, in terms of the injustices inflicted upon African people. But one of the things in terms of disposition of religion is that typically they've always used white preachers to minister to black congregations. But what happened was that those slave masters, those individuals in position of power, realize that the whole attempt to administer, you know, have white folks minister to African people, one working. I mean, because that's the cadence, kind of metrics, all those kind of things, the rhythm, you know, in terms of how they articulated, didn't sit well in terms of the African masses. So it wasn't received well. So they did realize that other African people could, in fact, provide the rhythm, the metrics, the tone, and that was favorable to the ears of African people. And so therefore they saw value in terms of having African preachers, you know, administer to African congregations. Now, in order to make sure that African preachers taught a kind of a religion which was not spiritual but actually political, was that they would give these preachers money, large sums of money, to preach every Sunday. Aside from getting off in terms of their duties on the plantations, they were given sums of money to teach, to minister to the African congregations. And so many of those black preachers began to realize that this was, in fact, was a hustle, that all I have to do is to say the things that the master wants me to say, to condition our people to believe, you know, that you don't have to worry about the situation that's going to confront you now, or you get yours when you die. Always respect authority. Never question authority. Accept your sense of inferiority based upon your skin color. So these preachers taught these kind of things for money. And so therefore, it's a precedent with heads, roots, even today. And so a lot of times you hear in today preachers talking about we walk by faith and not by sight, which is very, for lack of a better term, extremely ignorant. The notion that somehow those things, those objective conditions that confront you, whether it be unemployment, homelessness, joblessness, living on the street, no lack of food, regardless of those situations that confront you, that is your job or your interest as a Christian to overlook those things, because when you die, it's going to be a better way. And it's totally contrary to what historically what Jesus said in terms of Jesus being a revolutionary, in terms of his fight against injustice, his fight against the powerful, his pursuit of truth. So it's really ironic that today a lot of Christians, you know, who run from truth, who accept all kind of falsehoods, you know, without question, and then to justify by simply saying that, well, my job as a Christian is not to see what's going on concretely, but to believe that when I die, there'll be a better place to go. So there's irony in terms of the historical Christianity that exists in Ethiopia and the Christianity that exists in the West are, in fact, two different Christianities. And so it's kind of conditioning process that exists in the West, where you have preachers with, you know, large mansions, jet planes, you know, millions and millions of dollars, you know, living well at the expense of their so-called, so-quote-unquote, flock. who, you know, who are working class people who give up their money under the guise that, in fact, if you give money to or the money to the preacher, then your life is going to be all right. And it's sort of absurd because nowhere in the history of the Christian religion there's anything about tithes. As a matter of fact, in the evolution of Christianity, there's nothing even about buildings. Buildings didn't even exist. Jesus never talked about buildings. That was something that was created during the colonial era, something that actually has its roots in Rome, in which they realized in terms of better manipulating and controlling the people that you had some edifice. You need some building in terms of bringing people together for the sole purpose of doing a better job in terms of administering propaganda to make sure that they don't question the state, that they submit to a servitude, that they become comfortable with suffering. And so this thing in Christianity today, we have to take a real look at it. I mean, as the situation deteriorates in society, clearly there's something really wrong going on, be it economic, politically, or socially. And we see it, indications of just how problematic the situation is for people in society every day. The growing number of homelessness, the growing number of people unemployed, the growing number of people who don't have access to food, the lack of education for children. I mean, recently in Mississippi, they cut the budget about $1.3 billion to give the money to Nissan to build cars and take it from the educational system. Now, if education is the basis for mobility, then why would you take $1.3 billion from the poorest sector in society in terms of not having these people accessible, these kids accessible to education? So there are many, many problems in terms of Christianity. So I think at some point maybe there has to be some type of discussion in terms of just precisely what kind of Christianity are we talking about. I know for the longest time we've been talking about who was historical Jesus. The moment that it come to revelation that in fact that Jesus was a man of color, that he was an African person, and all of a sudden Jesus' color is irrelevant. Well, it was never irrelevant before. It was always irrelevant before when we thought Jesus was white. So there's a lot of politics when it comes to Christianity. So I think that it behooves us to confront these political the political tenet of Christianity, and begin to dissect it and to understand properly what it means to our lives and how it might in fact disempower us in terms of doing the kind of things that we need to do in this society. One of the things that they're very, very clear on, and history is very, very clear on, is that when things, people who suffer the most are the people who are without wealth, who are without power. And so clearly we were disproportionately talking about a large number of African people who in fact will be adversely affected by any changes, any downturn, in the society. And clearly there's a large number of poor white people who will be affected as well. Whether or not most poor white people understand the nature of their oppression remains to be seen. There are many who have yet to grasp the nature of their own oppression because they're stuck on racism. So at some point they can liberate themselves from racism, then maybe, too, they can begin to see, that the exploitation that is inflicted upon against African people also is inflicted on poor white folks. But the problems are very, very clear. And what we're going to do in terms of limiting the problems remains to be seen. But one thing's for sure, no amount of hiding from the problems is going to make the problems dissipate. They're going to continue. They're going to proliferate. They're going to grow. In this society, we've got a situation where people, when we talk about homelessness in the cities, gentrification has been growing leaps and bounds, and there's a reason why gentrification has been growing, and one of the reasons why is the economic disparities that exist in society. One of the things about the virtue of policy set by the U.S. economic policy set by U.S. government and the Federal Reserve, one of the things is that clearly there's money doesn't flow through the system, and as a consequence of money not flowing through the system, there's no way in terms of using investments, to stimulate the economy, simply because there's no money to invest. And the downside is that when it happens, is that the cities are cash strapped, so which means that they don't have access to large sums of cash, which means that cities run deficits. And so the question is, how do the cities make up for the deficit? Well, they entice people with some means to move into the cities, which replaces those poor African people who have been in the cities who no longer can afford their houses or their apartments. And clearly, one of the things is that when we talk about gentrification, we talk about it on the average. We're talking about cities being on average 55 billion in the deficit. So to offset that deficit, gentrification has been the only real option for the system. And so the issue in terms of humanity, the question in terms of fairness, of justice, is not an issue for those who are governed by the bottom line. Or a society or a system would say that human life doesn't matter, that all that matters is money, then you've got to understand that your existence, if you don't have money, is esoteric. You don't have a right to exist. And so, therefore, as a Christian, you may think that the Creator endows you with a right to exist. But in terms of capitalism, they say you don't have a right to exist. So there's a fundamental contradiction between the tenets of religion and the tenets of capitalism. So people have to reconcile for themselves exactly which way forward in terms of resolving this problem. It's not going to be wished away. It's not going to be prayed away. It's going to take some work once people actually wake up and first and foremost realize the problem exists and then move in an organized fashion to remedy the situation. So this is the problem that we find ourselves in, and it would be great if people who profess to be Christians were in fact conscious or begin to educate themselves about what Christianity is really all about. And begin to move in a direction which is really salvation, you know, for humanity, and not a detriment to humanity.
Okay, we'd like to let our listeners, I want to just know that you are listening to Africa on the Move. I'm your brother Africa. Tonight we basically have an open forum, open mic. We want our listeners to call in to share with us what's on their mind. There are so many things going on. Right now, recently, the last two or three callers, they've been talking in the realms of religion and spirituality, and more particularly, what is the role of the church and what does it mean in terms of the suffering of those who are down and out. And we'll come back and we'll have these discussions. But what I want to do right now is get some other callers in, see what's on the agenda, what's on their mind. And we want everybody to stay on because we're going to have a dialogue among us, because one of the things that Africa on the Move is intended to do is to stimulate information and discussion among us. You know, I don't know if people realize there seems to be a movement in this country year by year where they try to stifle dissent. They're trying to intimidate people from speaking and thinking their mind. And I think there's a lot of intimidation going on. And I'm saying that because I think, number one, if you look at what's going on in Palestine today, and look at very few people are saying anything, particular people of so-called authority or people who are in the position who knows what's going on but not saying anything. What are the factors that would make a person or make a people or make an organization be quiet on crucial issues such as what is going on in Palestine today or what has been happening and continue to happen in the Congo? We have lost over 6 million Africans. Very few people have known anything about it, and those have said nothing about it. I mean, recently in Philadelphia, we like to talk about a little local case in Philadelphia, how 5 policemen were recently caught and indicted for they were caught for trafficking drugs. One policeman had $30,000 on him, and they made him go back to his home when he had $80,000 in his safe. It was all drug-related money, and they falsified and put a lot of people in jail that didn't belong. But again, they didn't receive a whole lot of attention. And people know about the corruption of the police force as an institution. Matter of fact, every time when they claim somebody had done something, if you know the truth, you have to second guess that. But people are scared to speak out. What is happening? Have we already evolved into a police state? One of the symptoms of the police state is this question where corporate power becomes so powerful that they control and create policies. I mean, we're going to talk tonight. We're going to talk truth to power. We'd like to hear your perspective. So right now, we're going to go to our next caller, Brother Anthony. We're going to bring him in. Welcome to Africa on the Move. What's on your mind, Brother Anthony?
Hey, thanks for having me on the program tonight, Brother Africa. I really appreciate it. I want to acknowledge some of the comments that Brother Hakeem made regarding religion. Continuing on your spirituality theme and religious theme, but adding to it, I think capitalists have taken great advantage of the fact that a lot of Africans that purport to be Christians do not study their religion. taking great advantage of that fact. Part of that is rooted that during the days of chattel slavery, Africans were not allowed to read. As a matter of fact, in some areas, depending upon where the oppression took place, they could get 100 lashes for being caught to read. So even if we don't, the oppressors were keenly aware of the importance of education as a liberating tool. Want to point out that you have brought out this issue of gentrification in our communities taking place, earlier. And I want to add something. It is actually getting to the point where it's killing us, literally. There was a brother that was killed in Staten Island for allegedly, peddling loose cigarettes. And it was a nuisance factor, a nuisance crime more than anything else. But there was a video shown of him being put in a chokehold by a group of policemen. One person being killed by a group of policemen, he was yelling that he couldn't breathe. And unfortunately, because of the mass media and our educational system, most of us, almost as a reflex reaction, turn to the police or the military when we have a problem. We have gotten away from working problems out among ourselves in the interests of ourselves. And that is a reflection of our, deterioration of the level of organization in our community. And I think the starting point is that we've got to get to the point where we study everything around us and start to become critical thinkers that Malcolm X had advised us to do. And that's how they're taking advantage of us today. That's my thought.
Okay, Brother Anthony, why don't you stay online? Because we're going to have an open discussion. We want everybody to stay online. And we're going to take our next caller. We're going to be coming back from time to time. We're going to have an open discussion on all these issues that are affecting our people and how can we move forward. Let's take our next caller. We're going back to our Brother Verner on caller 0240. Brother Verner, 0240. Yes, your question or comment. Do we have it there, Brother Verner? Okay, let's
sorry
come back
about that. Sorry, I had my mic. I forget I have this hand. I had my headset on, and that little piece with the microphone I had off. Sorry about that. But gentlemen, there's a whole lot of heavy conversations going on. And first, I'm going to say it this way. As a believer in Jesus Christ or Yeshua, when somebody asks me my religion, I will tell them, by man's definition, I'm Christian, but I'm a child of the Most High God and a believer in the Messiah, Jesus. All right? There's a lot of things that are taking place and is done in the name of religion, man-made religions. Okay, wars, and there's a war World War III is brewing right now in the name of religion. But I want to remind the gentleman of a passage in Ephesians, and simply said that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against the principalities and the darkness and the rulers of this world in high places. In other words, we're fighting against Satan and his forces. And that might sound unrelated to what all you gentlemen are talking about, but each and every one of the issues that you have mentioned, he is the author of these problems. And it so happens that this spiritual war, this spiritual battle that's taking place, spills over into or manifests into the physical world. And, there are those that are so against Israel. And yet I look in scriptures and I find that the scriptures tells us that we are the generation when we see Israel surrounded by all her enemies, quoting that they're going to wipe her off the face of the earth, which they're doing. When you hear the sounds of peace and safety, then sudden destruction. The so-called peace talks that had got finished with, it's peace and safety that they're saying. What I'm saying is that we're look at every angle that we look at this, we are at the end of the age, not the end of the world, not oblivion, but the end of a particular age. We're getting ready to usher in yet another age or another dispensation period of time. A lot of our social issues are being led by, again, Satan, the enemy, and it's all mostly coming out of Western Europe, and it's called Agenda 21. They want this new world order. Well, again, the scripture says that when you hear of them talk about a one world government, then look up for your redemption draweth nigh. And this is where we're at. Yes, we are, to answer your question, Lee, we are already in a police state. Look what's taking place in Mexico. As the other brother said, look at what's taking over in New York with the gentleman that they choked to death. Look in other states, in Colorado, in other states where they are taking people's land, their property, our constitutional rights of this nation, and our civil rights, our human rights, are being utterly shredded right before our very eyes. And our media, who is partaker in this crime, they're not reporting any of this whatsoever. So we have to go to the root cause. And the root cause is, where's my faith? And that's what I have to speak on at this point in time. But with that, I just want to say one more thing about Israel. I find it kind of hard to understand. If I believe in Jesus Christ, which I do, and Jesus said that I'm to love all men, I'm to love my enemy, then if I'm a partaker, if I'm a believer in Jesus Christ, then how can I hate anyone, be it Israel, Hamas, Palestine, or whatever nation? How can I hate anyone if I'm a believer in the Lord Jesus Christ? Now, what they don't tell you in the news is Israel, if you look at the Google Earth map, if you look at Israel is just a little snippet of land. But then look at all the land surrounding Israel, and they want to wipe Israel off the face of this earth. Israel is, it's just like I explained, I think it was one of you gentlemen I talked to once before about if I'm correct. But I feel like this. If I'm in my home and you're shooting bullets into my home, I have an obligation to protect my family in my home. Now, if you decide that you want to pick up a five-year-old child and hide behind that five-year-old child, yes, there's going to be a casualty because I'm going to stop you from shooting in my home. And I'm sorry. Okay, gentlemen, I'm rampant. Go ahead.
Okay, I think your response will get quite a bit of response when we come back. So just hold on, Verna, and we'll go to our next caller. We have caller 8488. Young lady, 8488, your question, comments, what you have on the agenda, what is it that you'd like to share with the audience tonight? Caller 8488, you're on the line. Caller 8488. Going once. Okay, I guess you just want to listen. All right, we'll come back maybe later on to call 8488. The last four numbers of your phone line will be acknowledging. Okay, we'll come back to it later. Okay, so right now we are looking at and been somewhat under the category of this whole question of spirituality, religion, the role of the church, its relationship to today's reality. And there has been many issues and contradictions that has came up. I will raise this question with everyone on this line, and I will let each one of y'all chime in on this question. I came back earlier today. I read an article, and in the article quoted Dr. King. He made a statement. He said that a nation that continue yield years after year, excuse me, to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social upliftment is approaching spiritual death. Is this a good characterization, realization of the U.S. government? We'd like to take a stab at that statement that Key made and put into everyday day terms in terms of what it really means from your perspective.
I'd like to take a stab at it, Lee. Let's see. If we look at developments in this society over the last several decades since Martin Luther King made that statement, we'll see that the U.S. has consistently spent more and more on its military than on social upliftment. As a matter of fact, they've even cut back on funding of programs of social upliftment in order to finance the military-industrial complex. And judging from the way people conduct themselves in society, there's a sign there's a spiritual death, just in the way that we relate to one another as people. The level of violence that exists inside this society is greater than it ever has been, in spite of the fact that there are more people in prison in the U.S. now than there ever has been at this point in history. Since the days of child slavery, you have never had that many people confined in prison. And also, the way people interact with each other, I mean, the way Africans talk to one another disparagingly to each other, and we're so casual about it, about the way we throw around the term nigger. And it seems to be intensifying on our youth in spite of a fierce struggle to try to reclaim our identity as African people.
Okay. Right now, what I'm going to do is have a caller who's been waiting for a while, and this is a caller that we are very familiar with. And we're going to bring the sister on, and since we're talking about the Royal Church and this question of sensitivity, this is the sister. We want her to take her time and really share with us her story and what's going on with her son as it relates to the community and how they become quiet or being very silent where injustice has been done in front of their face or in their community. And she's going to talk about a case dealing with her son, the Michael Fulton case, and we all want to have a serious dialogue with the sister. There are so many things that we can learn that's going on in the case. We would like to, right now, bring on Sister Katie. We would like to welcome her to Africa on the Move. And we have plenty of time, Sister Katie, this whole program to give our people information so they can make better decisions. And for right now, we'd like for you to share your story. What's happening with your son, Michael? And concretely, we have quite a few people on tonight. We hope they will also become advocate like we have to try to help this young brother from ending up in the pipeline of the prison. So, Sister Katie, welcome to Africa on the Move. What is going on with Brother Michael, and what is going on in terms of the judiciary system as it relates to our young African males?
At this time, Michael is still out on bond, and he is complying with all of the court orders. He has complied with everything to date, and his case has been out there now for over a year. We are waiting to go to trial in September. And I say that I appreciate the fact that you've connected this program today with the institution of religion, because I continue to ask for help. I continue to ask for support and understanding because Michael continues to struggle with these charges. These charges against Michael are based on computer images that they said they found on his computer. Law enforcement officials came into our home from Douglas County. We've never lived in Douglas County. We don't know anyone who does live in Douglas County. These law enforcement officials came into our home with a passkey. They did not execute a warrant. And when we went before the judge with a public defender and at my promotion referenced the suppression of the warrant, that was denied. Now, they took a long time to bring forth all of what they said was their discovery. Michael was told that he cannot see the discovery, which means that he's been accused of something and he's been charged with something, but he cannot see the evidence that they have against him. So he's been blindsided. At this time, we continue to tell the public Michael's story, that this young man is innocent of these charges. But the community has been told to keep all of their children away from us. They have made the community in Colorado afraid to interact with us. It appears as though law enforcement officials have sabotaged Michael's reputation. This is a young man who graduated from college, University of Colorado in Boulder. He was recruited from Englewood High School. He's never had a problem with the law. He has never had any problems on the college campus. And all of a sudden, his life is turned upside down with these charges. They told Michael that he cannot see the charges, that he cannot see the discovery, he cannot see the evidence, and they cannot tell the jury, which is likely to be an all-white jury, that they cannot tell the jury that if he's convicted, that he will have to register for the rest of his life as a sex offender based on these computer images. And I said to them that if the jury doesn't get the right instructions, if the jury is not told the truth, the jury is going to be used. So at this point, we are trying to get a lawyer that we think would be able to help Michael with his defense. The lawyers that we have spoken to indicate that they are willing and able to take on this case, but they need funds to do that. So we have set up two websites, and we are asking people to please visit those websites and read Michael's story. And if you do that, you can also make a donation that will be used for his defense. Any donation that we receive will be given to an attorney that we think would be able to help him with his defense. We also would be able to bring on a computer expert who can show that Michael Fulton was not home when they confiscated his computer from his residence, and would also be able to pull up the information that they said they found on the computers. A computer expert would be able to analyze and disseminate dates and times as to what they're alleging Michael to have done. So I'm asking the public, if you could please visit the websites that we have established, we would appreciate taking the time to read his story. You can go to www.imagineif.nationbuilder.com. That's /Michael Fulton, and you would be able to pull up his story. You would also be able to make a donation. Again, that is www.imagineif.nationbuilder.com /Michael Fulton. The second website is gofundme.com /BFWFNK. Again, gofundme.com /BFWFNK. That would also give you access to Michael's story. Another way you can contact us and find out what's going on with Michael would be to go to an email. Email us at saveoursons2013@gmail.com. We will be glad to respond. The Save Our Sons Defense Fund is a nonprofit tax-exempt organization. So if you make any donations, you would really and truly be recognized as a tax-exempt, and we would appreciate your help. You can also write to us, Post Office Box 58, Englewood, Colorado, 80151, or you can go to Wells Fargo Bank and make a donation to Save Our Sons Defense Fund, and anyone would be able to help you. But I think at this point, as all of the guests have eloquently said, that yes, they are no longer looking for an avenue to help. They're building prisons for our young men. And they have decided that Michael will not be able to build a defense, because if they don't know the story, if we don't tell his story, he's going to be crucified in the state of Colorado. This young man does not deserve what they are putting on him right now. He truly does not deserve this. They confiscated his computers when he was not at home. And now they're telling the public and telling him that he cannot see the evidence. So we need help with Michael, and we need help in building his defense, because I think that with the public knowledge and with the public support, we can make a difference in his life and in his future. And I say this with the understanding that I continue to ask for help, because 2 Corinthians 5:7 says we walk by faith and not by sight. That's why I continue to ask for help, and I continue to tell Michael's story. I appreciate your understanding. I appreciate your support. But this is a young man living in Colorado who has been caught up in what you would call a fishing expedition. They're looking for something to put on him, and this is the best they can do.
Sister Katie, in terms of your story, let's just highlight some critical points that we all need to be aware of that can happen to us and our children. Number one, you mentioned earlier about this whole legal process over wine, failure to produce wine, but yet came into your house. And I believe I heard your story before, for those who haven't. When they entered the house, what kind of treatment did you receive? And what did they take other than computers? They took things that was nowhere near related to their so-called allegations. Can you talk to us a little bit about that and what has been the judge ruling up to this point on whether or not these evidence and information they have is admissible?
Yes, they came into our home with a pass key. They did not knock, and they caught me in my nightgown, and they ordered me at gunpoint to leave my home immediately. And I walked out in my nightgown. As they continued to search, they took away all of the information, anything related to technology, they took away from us. They said they were looking for my son, Michael. I told them Michael was not at home. They continued to search for him anyway. They searched bedrooms, closets, dishwasher, searched my purse. They searched everything related to our living. They took away all of the computers from our home. They took away 4 or 5 computers, old and new. We had old computers that were donated to us that were in the back closet. They took all of those also. They took our cell phones. They took cash, and they took cameras. They took everything away that they thought would help us ask for help or relate us to the public. Anything that would be used as a means of communication with the public, they took. We had to reinvest in phones and anything that we needed to carry on our livelihood. When we went to court and we tried to tell the public defender that we need to make a motion reference to the suppression of the warrant, the judge denied that. That was still not acknowledged. But in their narrative, the police wrote in their own narrative that they were waiting for a search warrant to be delivered to them while they were in my home. So they admitted to themselves that they came in without a search warrant, that the search warrant was not properly executed. But they've forgotten that they stole the story. So yes, Michael's rights have already been trampled. His constitutional right has already been abused. Therefore, they are hoping that we just sit back and don't do anything to support this young man and put him before an all-white jury in Douglas County. They'll go through the motion and come back with a guilty verdict. And Michael will be on the pipeline to prison.
Yeah, Sister Katie, you know, right now people there are talking about this Ebola virus coming all the way so-called from Africa to America. I think there are some viruses that are more dangerous than what Ebola virus could ever be. That our youth and those who have computers need to worry about. Can you talk about this issue of viruses and how computers can be compromised, and what you think of the possibilities that could have happened in your case?
There's no doubt in my mind about it. If they found information on his computer, they know how it got there and when. And computer viruses are something that we're all vulnerable to this if we have a computer. If we have a computer, we must all set up what they call firewalls. If you don't have a firewall, your computer can be associated with anything, anytime, on any circumstance. They know this. They are fully aware of this. Even the team of people that came into our home identified themselves to the news media as an internet group against crime against children. Well, they know all about computers. They know what can be done by the back door, and they know exactly how viruses can be infiltrated onto the computer. So they are hoping that Michael and no one else cares enough to build the sense of his behalf, or even to examine the computer that they took. But they're saying that, well, if we have a computer expert, it has to be somebody that the state wants. It has to be someone from Colorado. We're saying that we should have the right to ask for a computer expert that is the best for Michael, that is objective. It doesn't have to be someone in Colorado. But they're saying to us that if we get a computer expert to examine the computer, it must be someone that we know, someone that we like, someone that we can pay, someone that lives in the state of Colorado. I'm saying that is not good. We need someone who is professional, who understands computers, who will be objective, and who will be able to do a fair analysis of the computer that they have. That's why we need a computer expert.
And we do know that computer experts like everybody else, some are better in their field than others, and you should be entitled to the best that you can get. And based upon our research and the people that you have identified, there's a young lady in the area is one of the best throughout the country. And it seems like the lawyer that you have right now is not willing to want to entertain or bring her on the board, if that is possible. Is that your understanding in terms of
that's my understanding.
The way
yes.
I've just described it?
Yes, there's an attorney that's very capable, and I think he's very competent to handle this case. And he asked us to please respond to her and let us know if we could give her a retainer of $10,000. We don't have $10,000, but we will share whatever we have if we can have her come on board to help Michael with this case. There's a computer expert in our office who said that she would be glad to look at the computer and try to figure out exactly what they are talking about. She would like to look at the computer and see what was downloaded, what was accessed, where it was accessed, and by whom. She would need time to do that. Her name is Tammy Lawrence, and she would be willing to come on board for a total of $7,500. We do not have that. We are asking the public for help. If we can engage these two individuals, professional people, to assist in Michael's defense, There's no doubt in my mind that they would be able to assure the jury, to assure the court, that Michael did not access, retrieve, download, publish, produce any of those things that they're talking about. And these are the charges that they have made against Michael. They're saying that he published this, he produced that, he purchased this, he solicited that, he willfully and feloniously did this. This is really and truly absurd. Really and truly absurd. They are basing all of these charges against Michael on computer images.
And Sister Katie, we also know that based upon our research, there have been numerous possibilities of how these viruses and images, if it is true, could have got on his computer without him having anything to do with it. Can you speak to the question of Verizon, Verizon, the cable company, and this question of people coming in and out your home without you knowing about this? Can you share those possibilities with the audience?
Well, we've lived in the same location for 10 plus years, and we've been told many times before this invasion of our home that our neighbors had seen people come in and out of our place, but they thought it was without our permission, our knowledge. It was not with our permission, and it was without our knowledge. And it appears as though the individual who had a pass key to our place had come in and had access to all of our information without making us aware of that. So the maintenance man who was on property for 8+ years packed up and left the property a week before our home was invaded. He packed up wife, children, pets, plants, everything, gone. No one knew he had left. I wasn't aware he had left. He left a week before they came in, which gives me a pause to say that he must have known that they were going to invade our home, because I definitely didn't know. I had no way of knowing that they would come into my house with a pass key. But they did. But he was nowhere to be found when they came in. And when they came in, they took away things that had nothing to do with these charges. They took away my personal clothing, dresses, shoes. They took a picture. They took a picture of Michael's boots. It's Michael, a brand new pair of boots that he's never worn. So why in the world would they need to take a picture of his shoes? They took a picture of everything in his room after they had ransacked and turned everything upside down. So they had Michael to be compliant with the random UAs. These charges have nothing to do with drugs. Michael has never done drugs. He has never been interested in doing any kind of drugs. And after 6 months of that, they said, well, okay, we can stop that. You know, all of his drugs, all of his random UAs are coming back soon, so he doesn't have to do that anymore. So it appears to be as if they were looking for any way they could to break this young man down. And if they can't break him down, they're going to frame him. They're going to do whatever they can to make the jury think that this young black man in Colorado is out to hurt all of the white kids. If they make these white viewers believe that Michael Fulton is a pedophile, then they will say, well, you have to keep the turn away from him. You know, he will hurt them. He will do this to them. He will not. And they know he will not. I have seen him interact with these children for 10, 14, 15 years. I have seen him interact with adults, with families, old and young. This young man was preparing. He had just completed his certification to teach. And he knows that with the beef charges, that career is gone. He will not be able to teach. Just by the rumor. The rumor and the misinformation and the lies and the distortion of his reputation, he will not be able to carry out his career. His life is literally on hold based on the fact that they said they have his computer and they're taking information from his computer to build these charges against him.
Lee, if I can intrude, because I'd like to ask Katie a question.
Go ahead.
Sister Kate, first of all, my heart is out with you. I believe you're the same young lady that was telling this story once before. And I'm going to have to ask a question of you. And if this question sounds too sensitive to answer, then please, by all means, don't answer it. But to me, what it sounds like, Lee, did Michael have any political views that he might have been outspoken on, like by way of the computer?
Sister Katie?
Michael has always, he's grown up with computers. I mean, I'm in a different generation. Michael registered for his courses on a computer. He registered for his dormitory room assignments. He paid his bills, got his class schedule, or got his assignments, and did his research, always on a computer.
Okay. The reason why I'm asking that is because what it sounds like to me, here you have the maintenance personnel, got a key, and he disappears a week prior to this. Charges are being brought up on him, but you don't even know what the real charges are. And there's several things that you said that leads me to believe something. Again, Lee, I told you how I feel about this new world order that's emerging. And cases like Michael Fulton are sweeping throughout this nation right now as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
Police are picking up young men, not just black men, but they're picking up young men off the street, and they're testing their waters. Like you asked the question, are we in a police state? And my answer is a flat-out yes, we are in a police state. But it's coming from a regime that wants a new world order. Michael is, I'm almost willing to bet they came across some information and or somebody pointed their finger at Michael. So keep in mind, the President of the United States issued an executive order back in March 16th of 2012. They can now, this is military though, just on the suspicion of nothing else, they could come into your home and not arrest you, but detain you indefinitely at an undisclosed location. I know that sounds somewhat unrelated, but it's related in yet another way because this much power is being given to all the law enforcement agencies throughout this nation, and it's being done systematically to the point where Americans are not really paying no attention. They, you know, Michael Fulton, unless someone's listening to Katie right now about Michael Fulton's story, or unless they happen to come across the website, they'll never hear of Michael Fulton because the news media probably, correct me if I'm wrong, Katie, the news media got a blackout on his case. They're not talking about it. And such a case throughout this entire nation. And it's all because of this one world order that's emerging, which some people think is a good thing. But what it's designed to do, that's why they got 800 FEMA camps being set up throughout this country right now. So that when that D-Day, so to speak, comes, there are going to be thousands of Michael Fultons sitting up in the prisons and won't nobody be able to do anything about it because it's too late. This is, Katie, you have our support because this is going to be this is a classic example as to what they're doing right now as we speak.
Brother Africa, I have a question for Katie.
Go ahead, brother.
Just a general question, and I think I might have raised this with you before, Sister Katie, but something that I've been curious about, what has the response been of the Africans in the Colorado area to Michael's case, if any, positive or negative, and do you think the response or lack of is due to media suppression of the information about Michael's case?
You know, to be honest with you, our firsthand experience with the Afro-American community gives me the response that they are either afraid or uncaring or confused or not strong enough to even address the issue. We have reached out. We have reached out to our black brothers and sisters and tried very hard to share with them our experience. Many of them have said to us, "I'm sorry, but we can't help you. I've heard about it, but I don't know what I can do." We spoke face-to-face with our mayor, former mayor, Wellington Webb, standing on the streets in Denver, Colorado, in July of 2013. We reached out to him and we shared our story. He looked at Michael and I face-to-face. We introduced ourselves because we are always proud of him. And we wanted him to know that this was not a sham, this was not a fake, this was real. His response was, "Good luck to you." We have been referred to several other black individuals who said, "Well, you need to talk to the FBI. Go to the FBI. And maybe the FBI needs to know what they're doing to you." And I'm saying to them, I've reached out also to some of the black ministers, and I said, "We need help. If you have a computer, if you know children who have a computer in your congregation or in your school, this could happen to them." Michael has not hurt anyone. The only victim in this story is Michael Fulton. He's the only victim. And the only thing he's done wrong is to have a computer and have computer knowledge. But when we're asleep at night...
No, okay,
the black community has been few and far between.
And again, see, that's why I make the statement. Either he made a political statement and or he came across something on that, across the computer that had some sensitive information. For whatever reason, they set their sights on Mike. Okay? And it has to be a reason why they set their sights. It could be somebody pointing a finger, he came across some information, or he just merely made a comment here or there that they didn't like. But again, this is happening straight across the board throughout the country. And your story, Katie, Michael's story, has to be brought to light because nobody, like I said, nobody's paying attention. The news media got news blackouts. They're not going to talk about it. And it's only going to continue to happen to the young men straight across the board in this nation. It's right now, it's almost a crime to have freedom of speech. It's almost a crime to have opposition against people of government. I'm trying to say it a different way, you know. But I would like for Katie, if you will, I have a conference room that I could do videotaping, and I'll just sit in the background and let you tell your story, and let's put it on YouTube, one of the main forums. Get the word out as well. That'd be another avenue for you to do that.
That
yes,
would be something.
Will...
Go ahead, Sister Katie.
I'll leave. Maybe you can help them connect with the website, Lee, and keep them in touch with us. And we will be glad to share as much information as possible because time is of essence now. And we really and truly have no reservations about letting the public know that Michael is struggling and fighting for his life right now.
Sister Verna, in essence, Sister Katie would accept your helping hand because with her case all boiled down to his two issues, the public coming aware of his case and they'd be willing to make a contribution and get the legal help. One of the biggest contradictions, and I'd like to hear the public, those who's on the phone tonight, talk about this issue, and we raise it with the general audience is this question of, look at this legal course or this legal system. That seems to be when you talk about lawyers, they have no compassion either. The whole essence of them being a lawyer is to make money. even at the extent of not dealing with justice. They don't pursue this question of justice. They pursue the issue of individual wealth. Lawyers have been coming to this young lady, looking at the case, seeing many loopholes, contradictions in the case, openly violating their rights. But at the same time, they are saying, not unless you have $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, I can't touch it. No one is talking about the amount of money, but they want it up front. What working class people, like the Fultons, have that kind of money? And you are right. One of the things Katie has been very reluctant to talk about, but we asked her today to share with the public, it may be also political motivated, because she also has a legal suit, a discrimination suit against the state of Colorado.
Almost definitely.
And many times, you know, when you have suits against the state, they can't get you to come at people close to you. But this brother is studying, went to school to be an engineer, and did very well, and a potential to do many good things in the community. As the question becomes, how do African people see ourselves collectively? If he is a part of one, let us do what we can by sharing this case with the world and whatever means we have to assist to assist. And unfortunately, up to this point, we haven't found no legal person who has the expertise who will be willing to volunteer their legal services. But at this point, in less than a month from now, he'll be going to court. They are putting pressure on this young man, saying because of the fact he don't have legal representation, they tell him that we're going to make you say you're guilty and give you a choice that you can plead to. And all the choices are death choices for this young man.
Mm.
And if it's him today, it'll be your kid tomorrow for those who hear this program. What it has to do with me. You talk about viruses. Right now, while I'm speaking to you, our computer has been contaminated and compromised. It'll have to be any time you hear they come from Brother Africa. All these same charges.
Brother Africa.
So to the audience and to the crowd, reaction on these two things. If you can share this information with your network, and number two, if you know of people who are in financial position to contribute, please go to the website or please mail directly contribution where this brother can get a lawyer and get a specialist in computer. They found one of the best specialists in the country. They want her to be on the case because basically that's what it's basically going to take. But if not, there's another young brother who did all the right things and he become another victim to the capitalist system.
Mm.
Go ahead, Brother Anthony.
No, I was going to add, Lee, that in a way, Michael's case is not that unique. It's very common for Africans to find themselves in situations. I mean, the particular circumstance, the technology is relatively new. But there have been a lot of cases throughout history where Africans have been forced to compromise their careers or railroaded into prison because they could not afford legal representation or adequate legal representation, I should say. And it's a very difficult situation. I mean, O.J. Simpson's case is more the exception than the rule, actually, if you look at it carefully. But for people who have limited resources, very limited resources, and don't have, thousands upon thousands of dollars to spend on legal assistance, a lot of times they do end up in prison. And it's unfortunate. And I think the brother pointed out earlier regarding the U.S. heading toward a police state is very true.
Yes, we agree to you, Brother Anthony, in terms of principle. Historically, right, many African kids have and will continue to fall victim, very like Michael has been. I think the issue that we are raising right now with those that we can save we should give it our best effort to save. The problem is the capitalist system is a real enemy. Until we change and eradicate that system, we will continue to have many victims like Michael Fulton cases. That is accepted.
Hello?
Yes? Hello?
Yeah, I'd like to chip in here if I can.
Yeah, go ahead, Brother Moses.
First of all, the shackle and chain, mass incarceration in capitalist America by Eugene Perrier. It's all about the capitalist system and the prison industrial complex and the whole nine yards and where it's coming from and where it's going. Now, the justice costs money. I mean, that's just the name of the game in capitalist America. Justice costs. O.J. Simpson was able to get off because he had a lawyer. And you have to speak the language. You have to know the language. You have to defend your client. And it takes experience. It takes knowledge of the system and knowledge of the particular case you're handling. Right now, I'm dealing with an organization called Alliance for Global Justice. And we handle the Chelsea Manning people. And his lawyer, it costs money. And I'm sure Edward Snowden's people need money. The best thing you can do is politicize the case. The name of the game is to politicize. You take it, have a press conference, and let people know what's going on. I'm sure you're doing all you can do. But the bottom line is you need money, and, who's got money? Who has money?
Individually, we don't have money, but collectively we do. I agree with the position Kwame Ture stated many times, and we keep forgetting it. It's a political organization question. African people are not poor. We are just poorly organized. That's what we are asking the public to do, to join in collectively. To collectively, there's no problems we can't resolve. So to those who hear my voice tonight, as an advocate for this young brother, as an advocate, you just heard his mother, please go to the website, give what you can, but pass the word along to your network, to your other friends. Because we know to make something silence is another way of killing it. Yes.
Brother Lee, one more time. I'm going to have to get ready to leave out. But please be in contact with me tomorrow and get me in contact with Katie. And let's sit down and into the conference room. Let's do a live videotape, audio and video. And it can also, Katie, if you have any documents or anything that you would like to present for your case, there's also a way for PowerPoint presentation that we can also put on the video and let people know what's going on. YouTube right now, even though censorship is coming, is still a very powerful tool to get the word out there. And that is our goal right now, is just trying to get that word out there as to what's going on, how Michael Fulton needs some help. And I'm almost willing to bet you you're going to get an overwhelming response.
Brother Vernon, we thank you. We'll be contacting you tonight. And we'll continue to
tomorrow morning.
Okay, tomorrow morning. We'll continue to be an advocate, not only for him, but I think for the future, for other future. Individuals may find themselves in a position, but our fundamental line is we understand that the fundamental issue is not until we eradicate this capitalist system, not until we understand the solution to all African people problems, if found under the concept of Pan-Africanism, the unification and liberation of Africa and the social system, Africa must be the base in which we must wage all of our struggles. Because all of this is really a manifestation for that. But to deal with the concrete realities where we're at right now, at the minimum, if we can share this with the world, I think we can change some of this dynamic and change the possibility for going into a jail versus the brother staying out of jail. So this is the point that we want to make to the audience tonight. Okay, Brother Vernon, if you have to go, we thank you. We ain't bad answering alone. We do have a caller that's
inviting.
Being out.
Thank you for inviting me, Katie. I'll be praying for you and Michael.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
We do have a caller that's been waiting for a while. We call it last for a number caller. If you have any questions or comments, you know, please let us know. We can bring you in right now. Caller 1661, the last four numbers. Caller 1661. Any questions or comments you'd like to make tonight?
Peace and love. I'm just coming in as far as hearing what was being said. So I say greetings to everyone. And I'm in Philadelphia, Mama Gail. I'm an advocate in the Philadelphia area for parents and children in the school district. And I'm not sure what's going on in your area when it comes to education, but in the Philadelphia area, there are a lot of changes that are taking place. And one of the things that is happening is that we have a deficit, a huge deficit, when it comes to money, and schools have been closed here. Children have been rearranged, the boundaries, and a lot of things are happening here. You know, I think back to growing up and hearing elders talk about walking miles to school, and here we are in 2014. And we have children that, if not given the car fare, that's what happens. So there's a lot going on here. And I've been involved in education for many years. And to see the city growing as it is, and to hear on a regular basis that the city doesn't have money, the school district doesn't have money for its children, is very alarming to me and very, very concerning to me, especially with people talking about prisons and jails on the regular. So my concerns is how, let me say it a different way, because I always want to come positive because, Let me start again, family. Let me start again because this is on my spirit to do this. Before I begin, I want to give thanks and honor to our ancestors. And I must do that because I'm getting messages from them. And there's a particular group of ancestors that I have connected with that I need to tell you about before I even begin. So I say thank you, God. Thank you, Creator. Mother, Father, God, Creator of all creation, thank you. Thank you for allowing me to be with this family on the air and through the air. There's a group of ancestors that were listed in the 1860 census, and they were listed as slaves, and it was, from my research, and I do a lot of research, it was the first time that there was this is the first time that I could find that someone actually put together a list like this that was across the country. So it was 1,555 of our ancestors that were listed in the 1860 census, and it's already done, so all you have to do is go online and it off. And I made a promise to them several years ago that I would let people know that they lived to be 100 years old and over. Again, 1,555 were listed, and they were from across the country, and the oldest one listed was 150 years old. And so I need to start by saying that I have been given messages over the years from the ancestors, and one of the things that they told me is that we are to go back to the beginning back to the basics for new beginnings. Have shown me doors that are open, and they told me that God told me actually that all we have to do is take each other by the hand. And so in my spiritual work, I've learned the power of what we think, feel, say, and do. And they're teaching me from the spiritual realm the kind of power that we have. We constantly talk in the negative, and because of the alignment that has taken place, what goes out comes back, and it's amplified, it's magnified. And so we have to be mindful and watch the way we say what we say, because it's power in it. And they've gotten us to the point where we've taken on a kind of speak, if you will. We have taken on a kind of speak that when we say it, it's so much power in it, and it's repeated, it's regurgitated. And as that's happening, it's more power put in it. So what the ancestors have instructed me to do is to remind we that we have the power to change the future by what we think, feel, say, and do. We African descendants are the ones that can change all of this. We are the ones. And so being mindful of how we say what we say and how we do what we do can change things. And so I needed to go back before I got started, because they come through, and they come through, and they come through, and they come through, and they want you to know that they are with you. They are with we. I do a spiritual walk every January 1st. And I was walking, and I started by calling it a walk for the ancestors. And the last year, they told me no. They said, and I'm not saying they said no, they're saying to me, not the word no, but we're to walk with them now. Not for them, with them. And so in walking with them, they also told me that we are to walk, we are to go inside now. We are to walk with them, and we are to go inside now. And so there are different things that you can attribute it to. But one of the things that you can attribute it to, again, is power. We have to begin to use our power like never before. We have to think what we want to happen. And then we have to speak it into existence. It is very, very easy to repeat, because the illusion is what's happening. But the truth is what you say happens. And I don't know how to say it any differently, brothers and sisters, than I'm saying it to you. But clearly they want you to know that you have the power by what you think, feel, say, and do to change all of this. I was told that there is no force that can stop this. You are the one. And so whether it is school, whether it's home, whether it's community, the key is the we, the W-E, as one, the oneness, coming together with love for one another, starting with the Creator, and then coming together with love for one another, the way the Creator loves us and the way we love the Creator. And so in Philadelphia, there's a lot happening. And I look at it from different views and vantage points, having been a mom, having been now a grandmom, and having been married for 39 years at 58 years old. I've been in and around schools for a long time as a volunteer, as a contractor working with schools, and as a motivator speaking, whether it's to staff, whether it's to children or to parents. And we are the ones, and looking outside, which is what a lot of people do, is not the answer. What is inside of each one of us is the answer and the key to all of this. And so I'm saying that to say, I came on tonight not knowing what I was going to say. I didn't know, and I didn't hear, even though I was on the line, I didn't hear what was said. And I needed to say what the ancestors wanted me to say. There are so many of them who are waiting, just sitting and waiting for us to take our place. And the world is waiting for us to take our place. The ancestors are waiting to assist us. All the answers are with we. And so the key is in the quiet moment, moving away from the hustle and bustle and all the things that keep us so disjointed, discombobulated, and uncentered, unfocused, coming together and first just asking the Creator, who is it today? Thank you, God. Who is it today that I'm supposed to connect with to change this? Who is it I'm supposed to connect with today to change this? And listen. Just be quiet after giving thanks and just listen. And as you move about, all the help will come to you. You don't even have to go out and look. The help will come to you because many of those people have been waiting for you. All of this was written long before we were born, as I'm told. And so they're waiting for you to stand up and take your place, and they will come. But the key that I've learned is faith. The key is obedience. The key is gratitude. The key is love. The key is oneness, integrity, resilience, wisdom. We have all of it. The key is oneness. And so I want to talk about the school district, but when I stand up to talk to the school district about the school district, oftentimes the ancestors come through first, and they want me to say things about our story. And so I talk about our story, or as they have called it, history, but it's our story. And so I begin to talk to them about some of the things that were done to us. But what I say to them oftentimes is you don't have the right. And I believe that when we stand on that, that they don't have the right to do certain things, or it is our right. We are to take ownership again. And I'd like to say to you, brother, that, and they say to say to the brothers and the sisters all, we, that we are to remember, they told me to tell you that you've remembered before, that you are to re-remember, that you are to reconnect, that you are to reclaim, and that you are to recommit. And so in doing that, there are certain promises I believe that we made before we even came here, and the illusion that is set before us makes us think that it's such and such. But the truth is, you have all that you need to get what you want. Everything that you need, you already have to get what you want. And so a lot of times we say, well, if I had money, or if I had a car, or if I had this, or if I had that. The truth is, you have, and this is what they told me, that we have everything that we need to get what we want. And so it's very, very simple. It's nothing complicated about it. And I'm told that we are not to make it complicated, that it's very simple. And I have to say to all of you listening, before I even continue, I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you. Sometimes we get so caught up in being caught up that we forget love. And the illusion that has been put before us is just that. And it's all about the oneness. It's all about love. It's all about connecting. And for real, I'm told again that there is no force that can stop it. You are the ones, and everybody has heard the phrase, or many have heard the phrase, we are the ones we've been waiting for. Well, we really are. And when you step out, all the help that you need is waiting for you to take your place. It's waiting, it's positions, whether it's people, whether it's things, whatever. It's all waiting for you to step up and reach out for it. It's waiting to come to you. And I, again, before I go on, and I know you don't have a lot of time for me to go on, but I have to say again, and I need to say this, I need to put it in the ethers, because with all that's happening all over the world, I have to say it again. I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you from the bottom of your feet to the top of your head. I ask for the love and the light of the Creator, however you call the Creator. I ask that that loving light permeates your very being from the bottom of your feet to the top of your head. I ask that it penetrates and permeates every orifice of your being. I ask that you're blessed, that your mind, that your brain, your heart, that your blood, I ask for healing for those who are wounded, that are broken, that are hurt. I ask for healing for their mind, body, and spirit. I ask for healing for the blood. I ask for healing for the bone, the tissues, the cells, each and every organ, each and every vessel and vein and artery in the body. And I ask that as we move along, regardless of what's happening to us and to our families, that we think about Mother Earth as she's going through a healing crisis, we will be going through a healing crisis. So we think more holistically, honoring Mother Earth each and every day that we wake up, and giving thanks, and just remembering that it takes all of we. And while we talk oftentimes about those that aren't doing what they need to be doing, just reaching out to those that we need to connect with, because those are the ones that will make the thing happen. There are those of us that came here to do just what they're doing, and so that's okay. Leave them be and reach out for those that are ready and waiting and willing and ready for you, who are ready for them. And so I say there's a lot of turmoil in Philadelphia, but what I know clearly, brothers and sisters, family, is that everything is in divine order. That while I wanted to talk about school, I'm given to talk to you and say to you that each and every day that we wake up, we are in school. We are in school. We are in class each and every day that we wake up. Each and every day we're going through demotions. We're going through graduations. We're going through proms, whatever you want to call it, however you celebrate. We're going through it. And sometimes you get, sometimes you have recess and you just have to sit and be still. And sometimes you're going through how do I say? You're getting promoted, so you're going from to the next class, and sometimes you have to go back and start again, and that's part of the process. So, brother, I called you because you called me, and I want to talk about Philadelphia schools, but they wanted me to say what I'm saying to you. I have no agenda other than what the Creator has me to do, and I continue to ask to be used as a vessel, a tool, a conduit for His will. And I'm saying to you, while in the ethers, people are talking about fighting and struggling and battling and war. And I'm saying the way I'm instructed, if we talk more, as we're doing the work, don't stop doing the work that you do, but as we begin to use love and joy and peace and harmony and draw on the wisdom of the ancestors, because even though it was rough, it seems to me they still celebrate it. Even though it was rough, and I have to go back real fast because I'm in Philadelphia, and a lot of the things that have happened, and the ancestors told me that many of the awful things, there's a word they use, happen right here, and so much of the healing needs to take place here in Philadelphia. And so I'm saying from here, from where people talked about freedom and they talked about the Constitution and they talked about all of that stuff, I'm free, and I'm free indeed, and I'm walking in freedom. I'm basking in freedom. And so I'm saying to you, as we go through what we go through, if we begin to, and you know, nobody has to believe anything that I'm saying, but I say, what if I'm right? What if what I'm saying is right? What if what I'm saying is true? That if we change the way we walk, if we change the way we talk, if we come with a different attitude, maybe things will change for us. I just know that it's important that we come from love and peace and harmony, and coming from that, and I'm not saying because I stand before all of these people, and I start off oftentimes with greetings of peace and love, and I begin to tell them what I'm told to tell them. And I also, while I'm doing that, I'm decreeing or declaring, this is what it will be. And so I'm saying to you, own your power. I'm saying to you, own your power. Overstand, not understand, overstand. Listen to the messages of the ascended masters when they speak to you. Listen to your ancestors, our ancestors, as they speak to you, and walk with the cloak, if you will, that they will provide for you. And watch those doors that have been open appear open to you. See the doors open, those gates, those chains, see them release, those that you want to see release, begin to see it, begin to know that it's possible, begin to believe that it's real. And at the same time, the instructions and the love that we need to give to these children, the love, the direction that we need to give to them, the love that we need to give to them, the hugs that we need to give to them, the loving touches that we need to give to them, the loving words that we need to give to them, will change the behavior.
Okay. Mama Gail, we have one more minute left, and we got to go to our next guest.
Brothers and sisters, again, I love you. And I say blessings, blessings, blessings to you. I will be at the United Nations August 27th, 28th, and 29th. There is a world conference going on there, and people are coming from all over the world. They're coming from across the country, and there'll be local people there. And I ask you, if you're interested, brother, you have my 1661 number. I don't mind you giving that out for anyone that wants to reach out to me. I'm available, and I am going to continue to pray for us, but I'm also going to continue to be in action as I've always been, I will be, and I'm saying again, listen to the inner voice, listen to the inner voice, listen to the inner voice, and watch the direction that the work will take when that happens. Peace and love, okay. Family. Blessings, brother. Thank you so
Thank
much.
You. Listen, audience, that was Sister Mama Gail out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And we go to our next guest for tonight who will share with us what's on her mind, his perspective of what's going on in Washington, D.C. around the housing issue. Now, many things have been taking place in the so-called nation capital. We have with our Sister Linda Leakes. We'd like to welcome her on Africa on the Move. Sister Linda, can you tell us what's happening with the housing situation and how it's impacting the community?
Yes, and thank you so very much for inviting me. Well, like you say, there are a lot of changes being made in Washington, D.C., and it's not so good for the lowest income people. We are losing our housing in particular, we are very concerned, and there are some people fighting back, but especially people whose incomes are something like $30,000 and below, they are having the hardest time holding on to their housing. We've had in the last, let's say, 9 to 10 years, we've had almost 50,000 people to be, I say, forced out of the District of Columbia because they could not afford to live here. So it's not looking very good, and that's a concern.
Hmm. Now you see, y'all lost over 50,000 people over how many years?
About 10 years since, like 2000 and something, 3, 4, something like that. We've had a major influx of higher income people, and because a lot of people don't know their rights, and we don't have a whole lot of policies. We do have some great policy to protect renters in particular, but a lot of our folks have been forced to move because their rent have jumped up to the point where they cannot afford it. And you know, when we talk about being able to afford a housing, we're talking about people paying 30% of their income for housing. That is, the federal government has defined 30% of your income for housing and utilities as affordable housing. So our problem right now is that we have so many people who are paying 50% of their income, 60 to 70% of their income for rent. And so that's a burden because folks are not able to do all the other things they need to do when you're spending all of your money on your housing. And that's the crisis that we are facing right now in D.C. It's really painful, and it's, a lot of people are suffering.
So where are people leaving?
The Frederick Engels, a collaborator with Karl Marx, wrote an article called The Housing Question. For anybody who's interested in housing, definitely read The Housing Question, Frederick Engels. You can go online and look it up and pull it, print it, whatever you got to do. But, like, capitalism is capitalism. And anyway, I'll talk to you. I'm out. Go ahead and continue.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I was going to say it's interesting that he mentioned capitalism and profit, and which is really hurting us right now. But the District of Columbia has a policy for its quote-unquote rent control properties to guarantee the landlords a 12% return. And that's very harmful, you know. You ask, well, what kind of capitalism is that, where you get a guaranteed profit? Because capitalism is supposed to be about competition and, you know, all of that. But that's one of the problems, and that's something that we are working on.
The profit drive is capitalism. It takes many forms.
Okay.
Let me ask you something for this audience.
She's making a good point, though. I think you have to appreciate what she's saying. That in the context of true capitalism, as is defined by Adam Smith, clearly, if the masses of people incomes are not sufficient in terms of paying what is quote-unquote market rents, then rents theoretically should fall. But that's not what's happening. I think what the sister is saying is that this is not capitalism, this is something else. I think she's absolutely right. Absolutely correct.
Yeah.
I think what's happening is that this is part and parcel of a fascism. So, which, in other words, in order to really consolidate control, then the money becomes symbolic in terms of, you know, being important in terms of being able to minimize, undermine the interests of the people. So what's being practiced is not necessarily capitalism per se, but something other than capitalism.
Yeah.
And I think that's the point she's trying to make.
You could make a good argument for fascism. Fascism is the open tyranny of finance capital. It's a form of capitalism. It's an extreme form of capitalism. But it's the open tyranny of finance capital. They're kicking people out, denying them water. It's fascism.
The only point I was making is, that's just one tiny a bit of our problems in terms of housing. We have folks who are living on the streets, you know, we have people who are homeless, and we have families living on the streets, we have families in shelters that are running over and blighted. And I think, as I say, we do have some people who are organizing and raising their voices, and we do get some relief. And, of course, my concern is that we have people who get more involved. You know, we can talk about what the problem and the root of the problem is, and we can continue to do that, but while we're doing that, the people who are the families who are living in hotels, you know, are being directly impacted. We have people who are living in these overcrowded shelters that we have here in D.C., and we don't have enough people who are in the streets, in the face of the policymakers, because those are the people who are making decisions. It doesn't have,
okay,
even under capitalism, the situation that we are living in the Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia, does not have to exist. But
I agree, and that's why it's so important that we understand exactly what the problem is. That's why I'm referring to you to these different books. Because once we're clear on what the problem is, then we can solve it. But what I'm suggesting is with Palestine and Israel, the roof is on fire. The roof is on fire. Now, we're trying to straighten out the second floor, straighten out the third floor, and all that. But we got to get clear on what's going on and what needs to be done. And revolution is the only solution.
Well, I'm not at that place yet. Where I am, and that's good for people who are there, where I am is trying to make sure that public housing is not closed down, and where I am is trying to make sure that the people who are incomes are so very low that they need to live in public housing, that we get more public housing and that it's kept up into a form that is livable for people. That's where I am. I mean, I love people who are at all those other levels, but I'm just talking about where I am, where.
So Linda, let me ask you this.
Yes.
Let me ask you this, Linda.
Yes.
Who is your constituency? In other words, you're trying to keep these great things on behalf of humanity. I'm assuming you're trying to impart information to somebody. You're trying to influence somebody in terms of addressing the issues that you're talking about. Now, who do you think you're going to go to that's going in power, who's willing to address those issues that you're concerned about?
Well, we've made a lot of progress in Washington, D.C. We have some of the best tenants' rights legislation and policy in D.C. because we've had strong tenant movement to put pressure on the policymakers, the decision-makers like the mayor, like the city council. Those are the people who got the power to make sure that people have adequate housing, to make sure that people have decent housing. They are the ones who have the power. They are the ones that we put pressure on, and we have been successful.
Well, that's a question, Linda. Now, I'm assuming that it's going to take some kind of resources in terms of addressing these issues that you're talking about. When you talk about mayor or you talk about city council or whatever, or whoever you're talking about, one of the things is that they have to appeal to somebody for money. The problem is that the economy overall generally is declining. Economic is declining. There's less money in circulation, not more money. So my question is, where is this money going to come from to address the issues that you're talking about?
Well, let me tell you where the money is going to come from. The money is coming from, like in the District of Columbia, right now there is a surplus in terms of taxes. That's where the budget, that's where the housing budget and all the budget, city government budget, is based on taxpayers' money. So in Washington, D.C., right this minute, there's a surplus. So there is a movement to make sure that surplus is used to make sure that people have not only housing, but the other things that we need. Now, in terms of federal, right this minute, the President of the U.S. and Congress are talking about providing $4 billion to who? To the Zionists to kill people? That $4 billion can go to where? It can go to Detroit. It can go to here to make housing available. So resources are there. Resources exist to make life better for people in this city.
I thought we agreed that because we're talking about prioritizing, when the capitalists determine what money goes where, that the needs of the average person is not an issue as far as capital is concerned. So I'm sort of confused. So are you now saying?
Yeah, no. For me, it's about power. Power grows. It comes in two forms. Power comes in the forms of money. Power comes in the form of people organized with a plan of action that they are implementing. You know, not just talking about it. And talking about it is good, like I say. But people have power when they are organized, making demands, holding folks accountable. If, say, the mayor doesn't do what people want them to do, what the people need, if the folks were organized with the kind of power we need, and we're working at it, then we could say, Mr. Mayor, if you don't give us what we're asking for, you're out of here tomorrow. We're going to fire you. Or Mr. City Council Member, if you don't do what it is we want, we're going to fire you. And that can be done, and folks are doing it. But it's
all
about...
And I'm saying U.S. government, if you don't do what we want you to do, we're going to fire you.
Yeah. I haven't seen that happen, but...
because we do a lot of talking, and we don't organize people to take power.
So that's how we
haven't seen it much. I've seen it. I've been out there with it, but That's how it goes. What can you say?
Remember, what you're advocating is who
thank you, but that's my deeper concern. I think in terms of longevity, I think that people have to understand precisely what's going on in terms of the economy. Otherwise, they're trying to blame themselves. So is that important to you?
Yeah, people have to be knowledgeable. Of course people have to be knowledgeable. But as in terms of the economy, there is money. The money is there. There's $4 billion going to the Zionists right now, yesterday. The money is available. The power of the people is not organized at this point. So the resources are there. The resources are there.
Rent and housing is based on ownership of land. That's why housing in Cuba is different from housing in the United States. The landlord, ground rent, private property, all those are part of the housing problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, brothers and sisters, we'd like to thank everyone tonight for calling in and sharing their views and comments on what is going on, what's on their mind, dealing with important issues and ideas that are impacting our community and our people. One of the things we're always going to do on Africa on the Move is give people information so they can do what? Think. And more importantly,
they can be knowledgeable.
And also, the last thing that Sister Linda just alluded to, we want people to join an organization or to be organized.
Amen.
So they can think clearly and they can become a certain power. So on that note, what we would like to do for each one of our participants that's on the line tonight, we start with Anthony. Then we go to Robert, then we go to Linda. Give us your final thoughts to our people. We got 1 minute. Anthony.
Yeah.
Sure. Let's see, I think what I take from this discussion we had tonight, what the sister out of Philadelphia said, I think the most important thing we need to do is organize. Get organized, join an organization that's working for our people's liberation, and in an organized manner, we'll be in a position, to channel our limited resources to help our people, Michael and Katie Fulton. But the problem is we're too disorganized to leverage the power that we supposedly do have. And that has to change.
Thank you, Brother Anthony. Robert? Brother Moses?
Okay. Let me say first off, I didn't mean to sound too authoritative. I like to humble myself under the mighty hand of Jesus Christ, who I feel is the one God, and it, now Satan is his messenger. But anyway, I just want to supplement and compliment what people are saying. I don't want to negate what people are saying. Certainly, everything Linda said is the gospel. I mean, I'm a community organizer from the old school, and like certainly you want people involved, just taking control of the situation and demanding their rights. And I'm just trying to keep the picture full, a comprehensive understanding of the situation. I try to supplement and complement what people are saying. And I could go on and on, but let me stop.
Okay. Thank you, Brother Robert. Sister Linda, final thoughts.
Yes. I just want to say thank you so very much. And I just want to emphasize that it is critical that people get organized and take action and be knowledgeable. Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Linda, and to our audience. As always, we'd like to thank you for allowing us this opportunity to come into your homes tonight and to share this information. You have been listening to Africa on the Move as your host, Brother Africa. We also would like to remind you that Sister Katie earlier has made a plea for your support. We ask all of our brothers and sisters and people of goodwill to go to the website and share this information about the Michael Fulton case. If you are in a position to make a contribution so you can get the proper legal representation, we tell you go to www.imagineif.com. nationbeeler.com/forward/MichaelFortin. You can also contact Sister Fortin, Kate Fortin, at 720-499-5146 for any questions or information that you may be seeking. As always, we just leave you with this note. Remember, without information, you cannot think. And without organization, you cannot think clearly. Join an organization that is doing something for your people and advance humanity. Until next time, we leave you with our brother Bob Marley. And let's graduate before we have This has been Africa on the Moon.
I wanna love you.